Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan. With me, my two sidekicks, there is Danny King, writer for the Film Stage.
Hey, welcome.
And Nick Newman, associate editor for the Film Stage.
Hello.
Today, for our feature review, we will be talking about the newest film by Zack Snyder, the Superman-based film Man of Steel. Produced by Christopher Nolan, starring Henry Cavill and Amy Adams. First, we will actually be doing a retrospective of the films of Zack Snyder to kind of see where we're coming from on an auteur perspective with that man. Before we get into any of that, though, I should say that if you'd like, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to this fine podcast. Leave us a comment, give us a rating, and if you ever have need to speak to us, you can do so at podcast@thefilmstage.com. So that's about it. I can't really think of anything else non-movie related that I need to say to all of you, so let's get into it. This film is directed by Zack Snyder, a polarizing influence, if ever there was one. So let's see how we feel about his feature film repertoire. Let's do it this way. What is each of our favorite films that he has done? Let's start with Nick.
I thought you wanted us to say them all at the same time.
All right, agreement. On the count of three, everyone screams it, and then we'll move okay. Into our Man of Steel review.
All right. Yeah, mine would be Watchmen.
Oh, really?
Yes.
All right. Why don't you let us know what you liked about that film?
Okay. So maybe I should just preface this by saying that I actually did a feature on the site that's kind of a textual version of what we're discussing now. Wherein I just kind of simply counted down his movies from worst to best, and I gave my reasons for that ranking, as any responsible ranker would do.
And, kind of you.
Yeah, kind of. And when I got to Watchmen, I sort of kept a little briefer than other entries, because I think other entries require a bit more defense. You know, Sucker Punch, for one example. So when I got to that, I kind of just quickly said that to me, Watchmen is sort of unlike any movie that a studio has released in the 21st century. That it's based on a comic book is what makes it all the more fascinating, because the comic book movie subgenre is, you know, something that's sort of built on familiarity. They're kind of built on knowing what you're going to get and more or less enjoying the results there, kind of repeat this process over and over and over. I mean, look at the recent wave of Marvel films, and I think even sort of the Batman movies are kind of built upon a mold that was started with the first. Whereas Watchmen, even though it's very faithfully adapted from a graphic novel that, you know, I'm sure, has everybody here read the graphic novel, or am I the only one who's read it? Or?
I have read the graphic novel, yes.
Okay. I haven't.
Okay. God, very, Danny.
Very faithfully adapted, but it's also very much its own thing, too. And it's a rather exciting thing as well. I understand why some people don't like it, but I do think that it is a movie which deserves some reappraisal, because it's been sort of forgotten in the 4 or so years since it has been released. But I think it's a really spectacular movie in its own right.
Excellent. And Danny, what about yourself?
I would have to concur with Nicholas Newman on Watchmen being my favorite of the ones I've seen. I think the movie, when I think back on it, it just has these great set pieces, starting with the opening scene with this fight in a really nice apartment building. And then it just keeps going from there. I also think it's probably, of the movies I've seen from him, it's the most interesting ensemble across the board, and I think most of the actors do a really good job. Probably the performances that stick out for me are maybe Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Jackie Earle Haley, but I also think that, like, Patrick Wilson does a very good job. maybe it's maybe less strong on the female front, but the acting is very good. And then in terms of his visual style, I mean, in comparing him with people who have the budgets that he works with, he's just one of the more interesting ones. And this movie feels like him unfiltered. Whereas, you know, Man of Steel, we can talk about later, it doesn't necessarily feel like him and his essential style. Watchmen is totally that and completely that. And it really maintains a coherence and an emotional core that maybe something like Sucker Punch, which is also in his style, kind of struggles with, even though it's an interesting film. So yeah, Watchmen is quite good. One of the best comic book movies that I've seen.
Well, unfortunately, I have not seen Watchmen, something we were just talking about before we began recording. So I have a smaller pool of films to pull from. So I'm going to have to go with Legend of the Guardians, The Owls of Ga'Hoole.
What?
I'm joking. It's a difficult thing to choose from the other films, because I feel like to a lot of people, Watchmen is his ultimate film. I, however, am probably actually going to go with 300. Just because even now, even today, after having seen it, there's still such an energetic kind of insanity to this film that just reaches so far beyond what I was expecting of it when it was first coming out. And it all still translates really well, and it still hooks me. And it's just this weird, this completely insane visual style and this, like, over-the-top level of storytelling that, unlike most films that go for that, is still completely infectious. And, yeah, I don't know. It's still just a fun film to watch. And I think it engages me on, like, a very adolescent level. But I'm completely okay with that. Sometimes we need a little bit of that in our lives.
Did you get the trailer for the new one?
I have not watched the trailer for the new one yet. I don't really want to.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
I got it before Man of Steel, so.
I did not. What did you think of it?
No comment.
Okay.
It's like The Rise of an Empire. So. you get what the title tells you it is.
All right, excellent. So those are, let's talk about some of the other ones.
Yeah.
Dawn of the Dead. I thought this was actually a very well done movie. It's got the fast zombies, but you know, that happens. I think some aspects of it that are a little off from the original. But on the whole, I remember quite enjoying this movie, especially the interplay between the people in the mall and the guy in the gun shop.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Snyder brought a lot. It's very obvious from the beginning where his visual style was coming from and how it was going to grow. Did everyone else like this movie?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of his Dawn of the Dead. I actually prefer it to the George Romero version, if we're being honest. I think the movie is a much scarier, much more viscerally exciting title, but it's also wise, as I had noted, that it's wise to kind of do something with the social commentary briefly and then kind of move past it. Because if you rewatch the original Dawn of the Dead, its idea is so simple and so on the surface, but it kind of keeps hammering at that and not really to any noticeable effect after a certain point. Whereas Snyder's movie kind of stops and just plays up the fun of being trapped in a mall against the zombie horde.
And boy, is that a fun situation to be in.
Yes. That's a very strong movie, and one I think is actually, even though I think it's fairly well regarded, is due for a revisit for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think to a lot of
like
people,
kind of like what I said about Watchmen.
I think for a lot of people, it's just kind of like, it's there. It's a movie.
Right.
But yeah, it actually is a very strong movie, and I do think that it'll probably gain some esteem, some mm-hmm. more regard as time goes on.
Mm.
Danny, what did you think of this?
Well, interesting thing here. Nick mentioned that it's due for a revisit. For me, it's due for a visit. because I absolutely have not seen the film. Which
you absolutely have not seen. Yeah. There's no possible way that you've seen it and just forgot about it. It's absolute.
But yeah, I mean, I've I've heard very positive things about it, including what you two just said. So I should.
I got to see Watchmen, you got to see Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
And I sit here with dread, realizing I'm the only person who has seen every Zack Snyder.
Yeah, Nick, can you, like, say anything about Legend of the Guardians?
Yeah.
Because it's, just, like, such a weird...
Why don't you let us know about that, Nick?
Yeah.
So, it's a very strange thing to just have in his filmography, especially because it actually came out 6 months before Sucker Punch, which is more an actual movie than Legend of the Guardians, which is... You know, not very good. It's a pretty boring film, actually, because it's about these owls who were in some kind of weird army. Like, they wear armor. They have, like, sharp metallic beaks.
Do they get into how they forge their armor?
I don't remember.
Okay.
I imagine, by human standards, the armor is not very strong. And there's no propulsion to the action of the film, which is sort of a Snyder's specialty. It's because it's just CG owls fighting each other, and you don't really understand what's going on, for that matter. But I think if you're interested enough in Snyder, you know, maybe give it a watch. But I that's the only reason I checked it out, and I mean I don't regret my decision because it was just like 100 minutes of my life 2 years ago, but. Still,
did you see it in theaters?
No. Okay. I rented it on DVD a bit before Sucker Punch. I thought I got to catch up with my Snyder man. So
the Owls of Ga'Hoole.
The Owls of Ga'Hoole. Yeah, it's not very good, and there's really nothing about it that's worth checking out. So there's Legend of the Guardians.
All right, and we didn't really talk about it. What did you two think of 300?
I actually said when I wrote my thing that I think 300 is actually kind of misunderstood, which is weird to say about that movie. But
okay.
I noted that I think it's misunderstood because people claim, oh, it's so stupid. And I think, well, yeah, of course it's stupid. You look at that film, it is absurd. And it is so willfully absurd.
It's like a camp masterpiece.
Right. I mean, even the most, I actually rewatched the most famous scene from the movie, aka "This Is Sparta."
Yeah, the well kick. Yeah.
Which, when you're like 14, when you see that movie, it's just really cool. You know, you're just like, oh man, that's so awesome.
Yeah, I want to kick a guy down a well.
And then watching it now, I guess I never really grasped how stupid that whole scene really is. Like, even the line. Because, you know, the messenger or whoever, who's standing right in front of a giant pit for some reason, says, you know, this is madness. And his response is, this is Sparta, which makes no sense as a response at all. And then he, you know, it's this ridiculous slow motion kick into a giant pit. And he just, like, sheaths his sword and walks away as this massacre behind him. The whole movie is so dumb. And that's exactly why I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think that, there's the voiceover too, which, oh my God.
Oh God, who is it that does the voiceover in that?
David Wenham, I believe.
David Wenham, yeah, I love that guy.
There's the villain Xerxes, who's this really tall guy with this literally impossibly deep voice. There are these ridiculous creatures that they fight against. The whole movie is a comedy, I think. And,
yeah, it's like it's a gross camp masterpiece. It's just like humor in excess. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, it's really good.
And it's got Dominic West in it, so.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Oh my God. Love that movie. It's also got a naked chick dancing on a mountain in smoke.
Yeah, that's definitely it definitely feels like something from like a Zack Snyder commercial. His commercial days.
Oh man! All right.
When's he gonna reteam with Gerard Butler?
I hear they're making a sequel of Playing for Keeps. So,
couldn't think of a better director.
Absolutely. Okay, so that brings us to Sucker Punch, perhaps his most. I was gonna say his like least well-regarded film, but then I remembered that some people will remember Legend of the Guardians. So this is just probably his most controversial film. What do we feel about Sucker Punch, guys?
Masterpiece. No, not really.
Okay, good. Jesus. Okay. But yeah. Seriously, let's get some ideas here.
I don't remember. I saw it in theaters, and I haven't seen it since. I don't remember thinking that it worked. Just like straight up, like I don't think it worked. But I remember like liking it a little bit and thinking it was pretty cool. And I especially liked the opening scene, which was cool because Watchmen has a great opening scene. So I think when I saw it, I was like, all right. Zack Snyder is like the director of these incredible slow motion 5-minute sequences that open his movies. Like that's what he's gonna be known for when it's all said and done. But I do remember the movie kind of getting out of hand eventually. And I think as exciting as it is visually, I remember there being a few sequences that maybe didn't work as well for me as other ones. Maybe there were times where kind of just the absurdity of it took me out of it, but I would be curious to see it again, I suppose. See if it has more value, perhaps, than I remember.
Yeah, I saw this recently, so I can attest that it doesn't.
Okay.
Boo.
I remember sitting there in the movie theater aghast at what I was seeing. And like even the action scenes are just like so divorced from everything. And
that's
then,
the idea.
No, I did that. Calm down. But I can't get into them. Like there's no like you're making me watch a 40-minute action scene. I should enjoy it on some level. Like I understand the ideas behind the film were to like cast a disparaging eye on the male gaze that usually permeates action films with female heroines, but like I still need to care what's going on, and they were too removed for me to care. Is that?
Yeah, that's completely valid.
Okay, all right. I didn't want you to sit there thinking, "Here goes that Philistine again," not getting it.
Not enjoying Sucker Punch, Philistine.
I was on board for a while, and I thought that the idea was really cool. And yeah, I don't know. It's just the balancing act that he was trying to pull off did not work, and then towards the end, when the turn comes and you can see everything, it's just a little too much. Also, the fact that it's like Inception style, where it's like a dream within a dream, that just creates such a great remove that I don't have any idea what's going on in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really difficult to find parallels in the fake world or the fake world's fake world. It was pretty weird. I feel like they should have spent just another week or two looking at that script.
All right. I do kind of like Sucker Punch. I think it's a fascinating journey into a very different territory for Zack Snyder. How he, you know, made 300, which was his big hit, had a lot of cool action scenes, and then, you know, he makes this movie, which is sort of intentionally boring, which is really strange. And I think it actually works. The movie to me is of greater interest than it is to most other people, which I guess I can't really argue against.
Yeah, there was there was a trend for a while of people putting out like videos that are like, you don't understand Sucker Punch, this is why.
Yeah, it's a fucking horrible video essay you're referring to. But
I'm actually referring to two of them, and neither of them is that great.
I'm thinking of one, which is an abomination, but anyway.
Okay, well, one's an abomination, the other's just not that great. It's just, like, it's annoying that, like, the presumption is, like, oh, you didn't get it, here, let me explain it to you, now you're gonna like it. It's like, no, I get it, I'm just saying it's not well done.
Yeah, I mean, I remember liking...
It's not subtle, like...
No.
The concept
I remember
of,
liking the audaciousness of it, though, for kind of...
Yeah, like, you know, it's the type of thing where, like, if your kid did it, you'd, like, pat him on the back and be like, you know, I appreciate what you were trying to do, but, like,
I'm sure,
maybe you should try again.
I'm sure Stephen Snyder is very proud. If that's his father's
that
name,
his father's,
I don't know.
I thought you knew what his father's name was. That was gonna
also,
be...
Gotta say, Jon Hamm is great in that movie.
He's perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, so. Man. All right.
It's actually just really quick, like quick anecdote about Sucker Punch. There's this critic for a San Francisco paper named Mick LaSalle, Mm-hmm. And he's like a really big Zack Snyder fan, and he wrote like a rave of Watchmen when it came out. And I remember after I saw Sucker Punch, like really wanting to read his review. And it's actually like worth reading because it's like the most encouraging negative review you'll ever read. He's basically just like, all right, Zach, like, I'm going to sit you down and I'm going to convince you to like never write again. Like, being a great director is good enough on its own. Like, please do not ever like pick up a pen again. And like, he's like, thanks, Mick. Like, just don't write. That's kind of like a funny negative review.
Oh man. All right. Well, let's talk about a film then that Zack Snyder did direct, but did not write. And that is the Superman film, Man of Steel. Starring Henry Cavill, Amy Adams, Michael Shannon, Diane Lane, Russell Crowe, Kevin Costner, Christopher Maloney, and Lawrence Fishburne.
Goodbye, my son. My hopes and dreams travel with you.
He'll be an outcast. They'll kill him.
How? Be a god to them.
So, Man of Steel functions as an origin story slash coming out party for Superman, who is played by Henry Cavill. And, I don't know, that's about it. So, let's...
Did you say a coming out party?
Yeah, it's his coming out party. Swear
really,
to God. In the movie...
Really weird.
Is that
way
weird?
To put it.
Is that a weird way to put it?
Yeah. What? It's like a
cotillion. He's debuting.
Oh my god.
In the world of the movie, this is his moment of revelation. Is that better? Do I have to put it more comic booky?
That makes the movie sound even remotely profound. So.
Literally what I'm saying is that Superman becomes Superman in this movie and reveals himself to the world.
Okay.
That's the entire point of the movie. Anyway, all right.
Oh, we're off to a real
interesting
start.
We're off to a crazy start. We can't even agree on what the movie's about. Anyway, so Nick, why don't you start us off? You have your review up on the film stage. Tell the people at home what you thought of Man of Steel.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, this is a bad film. It's a bad film.
Uh-oh.
I'll hand it off to you now. No.
Back to you, Brian. That.
Yeah, no, I really did not like this movie, and I'm honestly surprised, not just that I didn't like it, how much I didn't like it, because if you read my countdown, I'm a Snyder guy. You know, I defend him much more than most others. But this movie I cannot really defend. I found myself kind of going with it at the beginning. You know, a little shaky, but okay, it's interesting. It's kind of, it sort of carried the sense of differentiation from the comic book movie that I was kind of expecting from Snyder, especially at the opening. It's a very strange opening sequence. And then it just kind of devolved, continuously devolved, even when I thought it could not continue to devolve into CG boredom without any consequence, without any weight, without any sense of variety, to the point where at the end I was just really kind of angry at the movie. If you talk to Jordan, he'll tell you, like, walking out I was just going, oh my god, can't believe the indignity having to sit through that. I've calmed down a bit since
it's a good
then.
Thing you never saw Iron Man 3.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm sure if I didn't like that more than this, then there would be a huge, huge problem. But yeah, so I kind of hated this movie, and it's too bad. I don't want to, you know, why should I feel bad for hating this $250 million superhero epic that's going to make a lot of money and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess I just was hoping for, you know, Snyder-directed Superman to kind of pack a punch. And it does pack a lot of punches, but the punches are kind of a snooze. So, yeah, you know what? Fuck this movie. That's what I'll say.
Oh, boy, this is going to be fun. Danny, why don't you let us know what you thought?
All right, well, I have a feeling I'm going to be the middle guy here, because I am mixed, but I'm more positive than Nick. I think, you know, we've talked about how much we kind of like Zack Snyder's previous work, at least some of it. And to me, this film, most of it doesn't play like a Zack Snyder film. I think maybe the opening sequence does a little bit, which, and I think that's actually kind of a pretty good opening to the film, just for how overblown it is. You really get a sense of like the scale that they're going for. And there's like a shot where Russell Crowe just kind of stands and like his whole planet is being blown up in front of him. And then he jumps on a bird or something. And then he starts flying. And then there's like a birth, and there's just a lot of activity going on there. And, I thought it was pretty effective. And I actually think the score, by the end, it gets a little bit repetitive, but the score worked for me. But then when the movie keeps going, it just starts to look more and more anonymous to me in terms of the drama and how the action's put together. And it got to the point where maybe in the last hour, it was like one of those things where like 3 or 4 minutes of the movie would go by and I kind of, it was like I didn't even watch those minutes just because everything kind of started blurring together for me and I wasn't as interested as I could have been. I think that in comparing this to like the Nolan Batman films, because that's sort of a talking point that's been going around, one of the things about Batman Begins that I think is really undervalued is that Christopher Nolan kind of really relies on Christian Bale to like carry that movie in a lot of ways. And he sort of delivers with a really excellent performance that makes you care about the character. Whereas Zack Snyder never really calls upon Henry Cavill to do any acting. And it sort of keeps the character at a remove. I don't think it's a matter of Cavill not doing enough. I just think it's like he's not asked to do that much other than just kind of stand there and look like Superman. Which he's incredible at. Like, he looks like Superman. Are you kidding me? Like, definitely. but like, I remember like seeing some of these trailers where he's like a fisherman guy, and I was like, oh, sick. Like, I can't wait for the scenes where he's just like this really like lonely fisherman. But then like 2 minutes into that scene, he's like on fire and like saving people. And I was like, oh no, just give us like a few more minutes of like calm. Like, we don't need to see him on fire just quite yet.
I love how in a Superman film, the thing you were most looking forward to was lonely fisherman Superman.
Well, yeah, cause it's a different approach, and that's kind of what the movie promises, and it is different. I mean, it's not funny, but yeah, that's what I'll say for now. Probably in the middle.
Okay, well, it's great that we are representing all various spectrums of reactions to this movie, because I really liked this movie.
Oh, fuck you!
What is wrong with you, Nick?
Go, just talk, just speak.
Wait, hold on. Before I go, can I say that there was a comment on your review of this on the film stage?
There was.
And you told that person that they should go see either Francis Ha or Before Midnight.
Yeah.
Do you know that person? Are they a friend of yours?
No, I don't know.
Okay. You told someone who read your review of Man of Steel and said that they might still check it out, that they ought to instead go and see Francis Ha or Before Midnight.
Yeah.
Now, I liked Before Midnight. Not a fan of Francis Ha, but I can see how other people would like it. It just doesn't seem like the type of thing you recommend to someone who just asked about Superman.
I mean, I guess I have trust in them to enjoy a film outside that realm, you know.
I'm just saying, like,
respect for my readers.
Like, if like someone comes up to me and is like, hey, where do you get a good cheeseburger, you know, I'm not going to tell them about the really great salad place four places down.
Look, look, I don't know how you do things on DearFilm.net, okay? But over on the film
Weird page, culture over at Dear Film.
Yeah,
over,
a lot of animal sacrifice. A lot of animal sacrifice.
We tell our people what's good. We don't care what they're, you know, we don't make, you know, presumptions. We just kind of say, hey, this too is playing. And yeah.
Okay. I was just a little thrown off by that. I was like, he's not even going to give like another action movie, something in the same vein.
What other action movies are
Well, that's the crazy thing, because then I started thinking about it, and it's like, other than this and like Iron Man 3, like kind of an action light summer. Yeah. Very strange. I don't know what's going on. Hollywood better pick it up. But I enjoyed this film. I like the fact that it really leaned on the alien nature of Superman, which is something that I feel like a lot of films just kind of gloss over. But in this, they meld the eventual reveal of a superhero who can fly and is invulnerable to the fact that he is an alien, and tying that into our growing sense of consciousness of our own place in the universe. I like the fact that they basically didn't really try to give him like a damsel in distress moment so much as it was like a decision point between the people that he belonged with genetically or the people who he belonged with in a moral sense. I thought the action was great. And I like the action in this movie. Usually in a superhero movie or a Superman movie would be boring, because it would just be people like hitting each other to varying degrees and distances. But in this film, Zack Snyder and his like insane hyper-visual style actually comes in handy, because like there is they have these very intimate, visceral fist fights that are happening within a maelstrom of chaos that's either coming from a third party or their own design. Like, there's a scene, you know, it's not a spoiler to say, there's a scene where he fights someone and the army is after them, and so there are missiles exploding and bullets pinging off of them. And it's just an interesting concept that, like, they're so focused on their own combat that they don't even notice these, like, mere mortals trying to cause any kind of effect on them. And there are things like that. There are pieces of interesting thought that are put into this that go beyond what other Superman movies have done that really made me enjoy it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nick doesn't seem to agree.
In response to your defense of the action in this film.
Okay.
Okay, so it is good. It is effective for a little bit, and then it just continues, and then it continues, and it continues, and you think the movie's over, and then it continues for about 3 minutes more,
right,
for almost no conceivable reason. And there is no weight or effect to these interactions, because they're just sort of punching each other, and it's, you know, I mean, they punch each other, they get back up, repeat this process over and over. And all at the same time, I mean, how many people does Superman kill in this movie?
Well, that's okay.
Death toll in the final set piece is like 40 million people. And
that is the one thing that, it's something that I'm kind of becoming inured to, because the Avengers did it, and then Star Trek Into Darkness did it.
Yeah, I didn't like it when they did it either.
Yeah.
And I think that it's.
And I don't like it. Like, at the end of the movie, when the final battle's over, you know, it's not a spoiler to say that at some point the battle ends. Maybe it is. Who gives a shit?
Oh, like there is anything to spoil this movie.
I'm sure there are some plot elements or something. I don't know. Like at the end, you know, they're talking and everyone just seems fine again. Like, you know, for months after 9/11, like that was still a big thing. And in this movie, some really fundamentally insane shit happened and everyone's kind of okay with it. Like, I really need...
This makes 9/11 look like a ruined picnic.
Right.
Honestly,
exactly.
And
it's the same thing with Star Trek Into Darkness. It's like, you know, I should get a little bit of a feeling that you people have been fundamentally affected by the wide-scale damage that has been caused. Like, so I'm still annoyed by that. I'm still, like, if there was a movie that was going to have done it, I would have thought that it would be this one. Because for a while in there, it really did seem like it was taking a pragmatic view of this. And I liked the fact that I felt in the physical world there was weight to everything they were doing up until the point that they just didn't talk about it. Like, who does that? Like, I need the next film to open with, like, an overhead shot of them rebuilding the fucking city that was just decimated. Mm-hmm. Like, I just give it. What is wrong with Hollywood? Like, this is becoming a real problem for me. Like, we live in a post 9/11 world where we know that there's an after. Like, shit happens and you gotta clean up. And the power and the catharsis comes from the cleanup. So give us that. For the love of God.
Yeah.
This is just something that has been boiling in me, and, like, this movie brought it to the head. But, like, I still liked enough of it that I'm not gonna let it really stick in my craw too much, but it's still, I will not defend the movie on that point. Like, yeah, there's a lot of bad stuff that happens, and it just kind of gets brushed under the rug again.
Mm-hmm. Former guest of the show, Jordan Hoffman, tweeted last night, he said, for what it's worth, Kal-El's going to come back to Metropolis with a really big broom and dustpan. Which I thought sort of captures a lot of the strangeness of the scene, because part of the reason I wasn't enjoying it, because I was just thinking about all the destruction that was going on, and it was sort of unsettling how much was happening here. And not only that, but I've raised this issue elsewhere, but I'm just so getting so sick, and I'm getting really, like, offended, honestly offended by the continued use of 9/11 imagery in blockbusters. I thought it was bad in Star Trek Into Darkness. This is a whole new level. And the way that Hollywood is mining a national tragedy for an attempt to sort of up the stakes in blockbusters is really, really, tickling me the wrong way. And I think that this movie is actually really irresponsible for the way it does that.
Really?
I do.
I don't know. It's like, this is
because there's a scene in this movie where a woman who, by the way, the female at the Daily Planet who you always see, I guess she's supposed to be Jimmy Olsen, but like the female version.
Is she?
Yeah, because her character's name is Jenny Olsen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is sort of, they didn't introduce that.
No, they didn't. I just thought she was like intern number 4.
Yeah, you'd think so. So, you know, there's a scene where she's trapped under rubble and she's crying in fear for her life. And it tries to use this as like a suspenseful moment. And I thought, no, fuck you, movie. You don't know.
Really? Because I didn't view that as suspenseful. I viewed it as kind of like giving us an idea of the human toll that these people were wreaking.
Right. And it explicitly calls back to imagery from the worst day in American history. Hats off to them.
Here's a problem.
Great job.
Here's a problem that I have with automatically calling it 9/11 based imagery. We've been destroying cities in our movies for quite a while. How many ways are there for a building to fall down?
Well, I don't know. Maybe when planes fly into buildings in this movie, maybe that. And then when people are running from a building that collapses the way it does. I mean, this so explicitly recalled.
Well, no, because the building, and I guess if we really wanted to get into it, the building that falls over in this movie falls over like a tree that's been cut down, whereas it was like a straight down collapse for 9/11. I don't know. Like, if you really want to get into it that much, like, that's a difference. I mean, it's not a plane crashing into a building that really causes it. It's the other shit that's going on.
No, I think that the...
But I
don't know. I think this movie is just so... I think it's very cynical, too, the way it kind of throws all this stuff at the audience. And it does so because it thinks that this is what people want. It just goes, okay, this is what you'll enjoy, I guess. So here. And there's no conceivable effort to it. I mean, David S. Goyer, who wrote the screenplay to this movie, is just the worst. It's just the worst. He has never written a good screenplay.
He's always decent with a story credit, but he should really give that over to someone else to write.
The only good screenplays he's involved in are ones that he has co-written, but even then they are, you can always feel his touch.
Right.
His terrible shit touch in all of these works. And here, I mean, there's a flashback structure which makes no really conceivable sense. There's no sense of rhythm to it. It just kind of introduces a flashback when it feels appropriate, and then it goes back to the action.
See, I didn't find that to be true. I thought that the flashbacks were integrated pretty well.
There's one moment where you actually cannot tell that it's a flashback, when it actually does not do a proper type of differentiating between that, which is, you know, first semester screenwriting stuff, honestly. As I was sitting there, I just felt increasingly aggravated by the movie, how much it just felt like a wasted effort and how much it felt as if just, you know, they really did not care, that they were just hoping to get this out and to pack in enough, you know, CG nonsense in the climax so that people can walk away thinking that they had seen something they enjoyed.
But I was enjoying it long before the CGI packed climax.
All right. Well, okay. Not only that, but let's talk about the cast too.
Okay.
How unbelievably they're wasted here.
We're going to just fundamentally disagree on this whole thing. I can.
You have Michael Shannon and Russell Crowe speaking to one another in their scenes, and they are speaking in what is practically a completely different language. They're talking about the codex. They're talking about, you know, these alien ships. All of Superman is fighting some giant metal tentacle thing, which has no logic to it, by the way, but who cares in this movie, right? And you have them speaking to each other, and it's just nonsense. They're not saying anything of value or of worth. He's saying, you know, I will build it, the new planet on your son's bones. And, you know, Shannon is fun in the movie. He's a lot of fun to watch, but he is not, he's kind of, you know, he's trying, it's like trying to push a boulder uphill for him. That's what it's like for every actor in this movie. Where they're
I did not get that sense at all.
Okay. I think at least 85% of the dialogue in this movie is exposition of some kind.
Okay.
Even he works at the IHOP. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought that line was absurd. The way they tried to integrate that product placement with IHOP, of all things. I don't understand why.
Because it's American. I don't know.
Yeah.
Even though it's the International House of Pancakes.
America!
I didn't have any of these problems with this film.
Did you watch it with your eyes closed, your ears plugged, or...
No, wide awake, eyes open, ears pretty much fine.
Okay.
You know, aside from like 20-odd years of listening to punk rock, but I don't think that has any lasting impacts, right?
All right, let's let Danny take the floor, please.
Yeah, Danny, why don't you lay in on some of this?
Had to leave the battleground there. So in terms of the climax, there are, as you guys talked about, some iconography issues that are questionable. For me, another disappointment is that it didn't look like Zack Snyder. And like, if there's one thing you can't accuse like Sucker Punch of, it's that it looks like other action movies.
This is true.
And like Man of Steel, like you guys said, by the time it was at the climax, I was like, all right, I already saw this in the Avengers, and it's also starting to look like what?
No, what? This is nothing like the climax of the Avengers.
It's very similar.
Well, just in terms of like,
there's actual threat and weight, and there's a plan in place. Like, the Avengers is just like the final level of what are those games? Modern Warfare game, where it's just like, here's a wave of enemies and just destroy them. Whereas in this movie, there's like an actual engine of destruction, an actual way to end it, and like actual emotional stakes with a singular figurehead of an enemy who represents an idea that must be defeated.
All right, but I'm talking just like the way it looks, like in terms of like buildings falling and like it looked really. I mean, one of the things that's cool about some of his other movies is how like colorful they are, and this movie is just so like gray.
What? Oh my god!
It's like, you don't think this movie is like gray?
No, the colors in this movie pop like crazy.
I mean, his costume is pretty colorful. Okay. I feel like in that climax, there's like one tone to the whole thing.
I didn't get that feeling at all. Right. And I like how it like the sun was setting as it was happening, and the cityscapes were beautiful. It was... I can't get behind anything you two are saying. Except right. for the ending where they don't talk about the devastating tragedy. I can get behind that. Yes, Danny, please continue.
All right, well, on the flashbacks, I thought Kevin Costner was pretty good in the movie. And I think that...
He isn't sucked up by a tornado.
Oh, that's...
Spoiler?
It's devastating.
I just thought that was...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like there's some problems with the writing. It's also if there's a problem with the flashback in the sense that like everyone has to be kind of like a life changing event. And like there was one flashback where it starts off with little Clark, like, and he's getting bullied, but it's like very moderate bullying. And then the kids kind of like go away after they see Costner.
Wait, where they pull him out of the car and throw him against a chain link fence? That's moderate bullying?
Yeah.
Danny, what happened to you as a child?
Okay, well, let's just say it didn't seem like a traumatic moment. Or did it?
No, well, the moment wasn't him getting thrown into the fence. The moment was him... he said to his father, I wanted to punch that kid. And we all know at this point that would fucking murder that kid. And so the life-changing moment was speaking to his father about the application of violence.
Right.
And then the escalation that comes thereafter, and knowing when to, like, fight back and when to deploy and, like, bringing something to an ending point, which comes in later in the film.
Yeah, no, that's kind of what I was going to say. Like, I would have liked to have some flashbacks where they were just, like, nice little, like, mini moments where you don't have to, like... where Goyer doesn't have to, like, give Costner, like, lines of kind of building, like, this whole philosophy for his kid.
But that's the entire story of the movie.
Right.
How
but, like,
Superman
we,
became who he is.
Yeah, I know, but it's, like, I would have just preferred the movie to, like, focus more on the character. And I feel like it
isn't,
rushes
isn't,
those.
Isn't that the character, though?
I mean, like, listening to Costner, like, give a speech isn't really building character for, like, Henry Cavill.
But it informs the decisions and the actions that Henry Cavill makes in the movie.
Yeah, but it's not... The movie never really asks him to, like, give a performance that suggests all that weight, I don't think.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Like, if you compare this performance to, like... Batman Begins and
well,
Christian Bale.
A completely different thing because Batman is an angsty, psychopathic, dissociative personality disorder having guy whose parents were butchered in front of him by the criminal elements that he hopes to stop. Like, he's inherently a more interesting character. Like, you won't get an argument about.
Well, I don't know about that. I would say this movie, like, is trying to make Henry Cavill like a very sort of weighty figure. Like he, like Nick alluded to the spoiler in the tornado.
Yes.
Which is his parents dying in front of him.
One of
just
his
dad.
Yeah. No, yeah, I know. I was just like,
Mom gets to get to
it. Diane Lane survives. She maybe has two lines in the movie. three lines.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
So.
Oh my God.
But I like Michael Shannon.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. I thought the line where he said, I'm going to like build my city on his bones was pretty awesome.
That's like a great villain line.
Yeah. But then he had this line where he's like, it was in the climax and he's like, where did you train? Like on your farm? And I think like at that moment, I almost wanted him to win the fight. I was
like, you're right. This farm
yeah,
boy
was like,
shouldn't be able to beat
that,
this guy.
That is a good way to like insert the farm. Like you should win. but that didn't happen. Yeah.
Okay.
There's also like, you know, you guys know the actor Michael Kelly.
Who did he play in this?
Well, that's the thing. Like he's been in a lot of movies. Did you guys see Changeling?
Yeah.
He's kind of the one who interviews the kid.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
wait, he's Stamper in House of Cards.
Yeah, that's
he's
right.
In House of Cards.
Yeah,
yeah,
I love that guy.
And So he's in Man of Steel. I don't know if he has a line. Maybe one. But there's just like a few shots.
He offers Lois Lane basketball tickets at the end.
That's it. And like there's a few shots where you see him in the shot, and I was just like, that's Michael Kelly. and then it would just kind of cut away, and it bugged me a little bit because he's cool.
Mm-hmm. Also, same for there's a few. I mean, I think that sort of the appreciation of character actors is one of the only Christopher Nolan touches you can feel in this movie. It's something that Zack Snyder shares as well. But you know, you also have Christopher Maloney shows up as a general. He's quite good. You have Harry Lennox. You have Richard Schiff, who basically, as I said in my review, does a weird version of The West Wing, where he's delivering this exposition to a group of people who are entering a room. He's kind of the smartest guy there. But the way he's talking about terraforming planets and just all this different stuff. So it's very bizarre. As a fan of The West Wing, it's very bizarre to see that play out. And, you know, I mean, it's what I said. They're all good, but they're not. It's in service of nothing. They're just kind of there to propel these scenes along so that we can get to, you know, these supposedly grand, supposedly thrilling scenes of people knocking the shit out of each other. And I just kind of would have rather spent time seeing what, you know, what Richard Schiff is up to. I'd like to see, you know, him and Christopher Maloney kind of trying to figure things out. After a while, I really stopped caring about Superman because he is so poorly integrated into this movie. He just kind of, I mean, he shows up and you think to yourself, oh, right, that's who this movie is about. I forgot.
Oh, my God.
You know, you have Lois Lane going around and, you know, Amy Adams, very good. Lois Lane, very charismatic. Good job. But you have her going around and then suddenly he just shows up at a graveyard. And I thought to myself, oh, wait, that's what Henry Cavill looks like. Right. I forgot because he has not really been in this movie for something like half an hour, it feels like. And yeah, I don't know. It was almost as if in Batman Begins, you know, you had Rachel Dawes go around for an extended period of time or something. That's what it felt like to me.
They did have her go around for an extended period
of time. Not for as long. And they not for as long, and they kept a good focus on Bruce Wayne. Whereas here, I mean, Clark Kent is kind of not an entity. Only at the end does he sort of become a recognizable figure. And that's
kind of the point.
No, but he's Clark Kent, you know, as a kid and everything. And by the way, just a side note, that scene with him as a kid in the classroom, terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. And that was, I think, my first sign of panic, where I realized that there was something really wrong here. At that moment, I thought to myself, okay, we're going to have to, let's step back here.
Yeah, I did not. That scene was one of my least favorite in the film, so I can find that as well. I don't have to defend every aspect of this movie, because the aspects I liked enough, but there's some bad ones.
Even the moments that are clearly aspiring for some kind of iconic stature, you know, when he lifts up the bus from the water, it's a really fascinating idea, especially sort of what it says about Superman. And I do think that the scene Costner has with the kid afterward is good. But the sequence wherein he actually has to, you know, pick up this bus is kind of it sort of feels like it happens without any real impact, any real resonance. It just sort of occurs because you need to put this thing in. And I mean, that's how I feel about the whole movie. It just feels very perfunctory, especially, as I said, the last scene. In which, oh, of course, yeah, he goes to the Daily Planet, he puts on his glasses, which, okay, another side note. We're still doing this where people fall for the Clark Kent?
No, okay, no. Thing. Well, okay, other people, yes, but I'm just going to say spoiler alert right now, because this might be the only spoiler in the entire movie. Who hasn't seen this yet? Come on, guys. But spoiler alert, stop if you don't want to know it. She knows it's him. She absolutely knows it's him.
I don't know.
She totally fucking knows it's him. He uses his same name. She knows who he is.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, you're right.
Because there were people walking out of the theater who were like, I can't believe that the glasses work. I was like, no, she knows. That's the they finally fucking decided that it's just a bridge too far with the glasses. So, like, everyone else might not know, but she totally does, at the very least, because he's not even using an assumed name. He is Clark Kent. She knows that Clark... She's not going to be like, oh, a different Clark Kent. Let me tell you about this other Clark Kent I know who's Superman. He looks a lot like you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just I needed people to understand that that did not happen the way that you assumed it was. I will talk about, very briefly, my favorite part of this movie. Or not my favorite, but Zack Snyder always has this thing about having very strong female characters. And in this movie, not only do you get Amy Adams, who is wonderful as a, like, amped up Lois Lane. Like, you know, no longer like the spunky Girl Friday reporter, but like a real balls to the wall journalist, been embedded all over the place. But we also have the character of Farora Ul, who is Zod's like kick-ass sidekick.
Yeah.
And her scene with Christopher Maloney that then gets played up at the end. I mean, like, that was one of my favorite parts of the movie.
I mean, I don't understand how that kills her when, you know, like, missiles don't and punches from Superman, but then the plane crashes into the...
And causes a singularity that sucks them into the vast void of space.
Yeah, I don't know. It just feels sort of... I guess I like that he's the one who takes care of that, but...
That's the thing, like, in this movie, the humans are just as integral. Like, it's, again, Superman as a leader, not as, like, a sole point of I can't think of the word I was going to say. He's not the sole guy getting shit done. It's not like the Avengers where, like, the police are completely and utterly helpless to help the Avengers, even though, like, Black Widow might as well just be a cop, because all she's doing is shooting a gun. Like, there's a good integration of that idea that Superman is a symbol, kind of like Batman is a symbol, that, you know, in... The Dark Knight Rises rallies the world around him. But, like, it's just that. It's this kind of idea of leadership and guiding principle rather than just, I'm really awesome. I'm going to get shit done.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. I love Christopher Maloney. That doesn't hurt either.
Yeah.
One thing about that flashback where they're at the graveyard... One thing that's really awkward about that flashback is because he, like, shows up and he's sort of in, like, a mini disguise. Like, he has, like, a hat on.
Wait, that's not a flashback.
Well, he talks about, like, the tornado moment.
Oh, okay.
Right after.
Right.
And I remember the cut back being really awkward because you see, like, Costner die. And then you see, like, him, his reaction. He's, like, screaming in agony. And then it cuts to him, like, wearing, like, the baseball cap. And it just, like, it was really weird because he looked silly. And so it was just like, he was telling this, like, tragic story. And then he's, like, kind of wearing this, like, funny hat. That was funny for me.
Danny, can I say that I would love to see your ideal Superman movie? Because it appears to be a man who never wear hats, fishing, and spending quiet time with his parents.
That sounds like a good blockbuster. I wonder if we could get some producers to...
Superman 2, Days of Leisure.
Yeah. But, I mean, like I said, I'm kind of, like, forgiving of the movie. And I'd be curious to see the second one, I guess. Maybe...
Yeah, I'm amped if they do a sequel.
Like, maybe them getting the Daily Planet in there could sort of introduce more humor. Something, I don't know.
Yeah, and they something should definitely, different. They should get Goyer to do the story and then get someone else to write it.
They should get Goyer to fall into a well.
Jesus. All right. I mean, yeah, that would work too, I guess. I don't know. I don't know about that.
I'm continually amazed at how, not only how bad he is, but how he continues to get work.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
And I feel like it's because he's friends with Christopher Nolan.
Well, I feel like it's because in terms of comic book people, it's like him and Joss Whedon. Like, those are the go-to guys in Hollywood where if you want to get a comic book movie done and you want to, like, actually have, like, something beyond just, oh, Batman, he wears a cape and he hits people. Like, Superman, he wears a cape and he hits people and he can fly. Like, you need them and their knowledge to be able to crack the story. But once you get the story, and the outline, you could really get some other people to do dialogue and other things. Like,
right.
Yeah, it is. It is. It was a disappointment.
Have you guys seen his directing work, though?
Oh, God. No, I have not. Let me take a quick look here and see what that involves.
Blade David Trinity. Esquire.
Oh, he did Blade Trinity.
The Invisible, The Unborn, and he created the show Da Vinci's Demons.
Oh, he also did Flash Forward. I actually kind of liked Flash Forward for like the first two episodes until I realized it wasn't ever going to go anywhere. Did anyone else watch Flash Forward?
I saw some of it. It was a bad show.
It was a bad show. There was like ideas in it that were interesting, though. Like, we'll talk about it another time. That's not completely unimportant. So yeah, I think we're done. I think it's over. Any final things to say about Man of Steel before we move on?
Michael Shannon, still love him.
Yeah, you always got to love Michael Shannon.
Yeah, still love Snyder. Still love you, man. Just do better next time.
All right. And Danny, what about yourself?
Let's see. Do I have a good... Oh, yeah, for the sequel, definitely find a way to keep Costner in there, even though he's passed.
Even though he's completely wasted here, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Great actor.
Brian, you keep saying, oh, my God. You didn't like... The color wheel. That's my response.
The color wheel sucked. Those characters were supremely unlikable. The entire story was just awful.
The story of the color wheel was awful. I cannot believe I have been made to hear those words spoken.
Oh my God. Well, first of all, I already spoke it the last time when we actually talked about the color wheel. It's not a good film. It's not. The acting is abysmal.
It's a great movie.
It's a
great film.
I'm surprised you're bringing up The Color Wheel and not Francis Ha.
That's an even better one. Let's just keep going.
Apparently, I just got a problem with self-aware, independent, black and white hipster films that have shitty people and expect me to like them.
Use the word hipster like it has no meaning, please. This is great.
What, young, affluent people, disaffected, living their lives completely independent of any actual care?
Yeah, that's not what a hipster is, but let's
move on. What is a hipster?
What is a hipster?
This is what hipster is down here. Maybe it means something else up in New York. Again, you can't use The Color Wheel of Francis Ha as a metric of my enjoyment of a superhero movie, because when I go into those films, I'm looking for something completely different than what I'm looking for in this film. It's the difference between, you know, going to a state fair and going on a hike in the wilderness. Like,
yeah.
Interesting that you would bring up a state fair.
Why?
I don't know.
I was expecting some big revelation. Mm-hmm. But no, like if I go into the wilderness and suddenly someone jumps out from behind a tree and offers me a funnel cake, that's very different than if I'm wandering through a state fair and someone offers me a funnel cake. Like, my reaction to those situations is going to be fundamentally different. Like, yeah, I didn't like Francis Ha. I didn't like The Color Wheel. But I loved a lot of other movies that you have loved as well. Like, you know, fucking Before Midnight was great. I think we all agreed on the emotional acuity of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked Rust and Bone. Like, I don't feel like I have to prove myself by naming quote-unquote good movies that I
liked. I'm not saying you have to prove yourself. I just think that, you know...
When you bring up my dislike of The Color Wheel juxtaposed against my enjoyment of Man of Steel...
Because liking Man of Steel is an offense to me. So, anyway...
Oh my God, it's an offense.
I'm mostly joking, by the way.
I hope so. That's intense. That's like when you said that you couldn't be friends with anyone who liked Wrong.
Okay, so...
And we both hated that movie, so again, yeah. Common ground. Let's end on the common ground. Wrong sucks.
Yes, it does.
Oh my God. Fuck that movie. All right, let's move on. Coming to Blu-ray and DVD this week, we have a selection of films, some of them good, some of them not so good. First up, Stoker, the film by Park Chan-wook. I can't remember how we all landed on that. I think it was all vaguely positive.
I like the movie a lot.
Yeah, it's actually grown in my esteem the more I've thought about it. So I'm looking forward. And I know I wasn't particularly negative on it previously. I still gave it a recommendation, but I want to see it again. Also coming to Blu-ray, some classic 80s films, Life Force and The Howling. Coming to Blu-ray on Criterion, we have Safety Last, Things to Come. Not coming to Criterion is Jack the Giant Slayer, Movie 43, 21 and Over. We also have Season 3 of Workaholics, The Exorcism Part 2, and that's about it. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff coming out, but that's all I'm going to talk about out loud.
There's a Criterion movie coming out called Marketa Lazarova, which I've heard really, really fascinating things about, kind of divergent, but good things. Excuse me. There's actually going to be a piece on that movie up this week. Not by me, but it'll be up. So
excellent. So everyone should check that out to see if it's worth a pickup. Any other films coming out that we think people should check out? Danny?
Well, you know, in honor of Superman Returns, I'm going to buy the 3D version of Jack the Giant Slayer. I have not seen the film. I do not own a 3D TV. But to support Singer...
You're just going to buy the most expensive possible copy?
Absolutely.
All right. We didn't talk about it. What did we think of Superman Returns?
I really liked that movie.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, too.
Yeah, I had wanted to see a sequel to that, because I do agree that it's a little too indebted to the Donner movies. It's a little flat at times, but I thought it was pretty strong as is. And to see what Singer... I mean, I don't really like Bryan Singer that much, but I do think he can... If he has a good script, he can actually be pretty good and himself. And a follow-up where it's more Superman-y, but without being too Man of Steel-y. Which, by the way, fun facts. The original title for Singer's Superman Return sequel was going to be Man of Steel, which I find kind of funny. Ooh. It's sort of a sick burn from Warner Brothers. But anyway... Yeah, I would have rather seen a sequel to that, but that will never, ever happen.
No, it won't. All right, so let's move on. What's coming out in the theaters? June 21st, World War Z, the Brad Pitt starring Mark Forrester-directed film about zombies taking over the world. We also have Monsters University, a prequel to Monsters, Inc. The Bling Ring, the newest film by Sofia Coppola.
Well, if I can recommend something else...
Absolutely not.
I should preface this with saying I haven't seen it, but it's called A Hijacking, and it's at 100% right now with like 30 reviews, and it's supposed to be a really good kind of thriller about a boat being hijacked by pirates, and with Captain Phillips coming out later in the year, it might be good to see this one now, so if you don't like Captain Phillips, you can
be that guy.
Yeah, you can be pretentious to your friends and say, wait, you didn't see A Hijacking?
I'm sure that means that Nick will be all over this film.
What is that?
Oh, snap.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, man.
But Captain Phillips is definitely a movie I would... like to like. Paul Greengrass, you know?
Yeah.
No hard feelings there.
Very distracted by Tom Hanks's accent in that trailer.
Yeah.
I'm Captain Phillips, I'll tell you my ship.
This is the Mask Alabama.
Yeah, I actually didn't know he was supposed to be from Maine. I thought he was from New Zealand when I saw that trailer for the first time. And someone said, yeah, Captain Phillips is from Maine. And I went, what? I guess, okay, anyway, in terms of what's coming out next week, I keep forgetting Monsters University exists.
Me too.
Much less that it's a Pixar movie.
I've heard really positive things, though.
I've heard it's fine. So then it's funny, World War Z, by all means, was supposed to be terrible. And then now people who are seeing it say it's actually decent to good.
Yeah, I've heard that. I'm interested in that.
You know, I mean, I want every movie to be good, but I especially
since we have to sit through them.
Well, no, also like I really like Brad Pitt, and I really like what he does as a producer.
Yeah,
too. I like how he kind of explores that way. So for him to be doing a tentpole zombie movie, even though that's something I would normally have like no interest in, for him to be doing it is really fascinating, and I'd like to see that work, definitely.
Have we all read the book, World War Z?
Yeah, I've read it.
Yeah, I'm just upset that they got away from the book itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean...
And I know that's like a cliched thing to harp on, but like that book was really... Like, the way that it viewed things and the concepts behind it, and then especially towards the end when you see what had to be done to win, like... Yeah, it just would have been interesting to see that set out.
Right, what I would say is just that that's kind of been known for a while that it was going to be different, so I haven't really been disappointed.
Yeah. I don't know, I guess my disappointment doesn't come so much from the fact that they changed it, because, like, I guess it's just the fact that as they have used the title World War Z, and as this was under the license of that intellectual property, that means that the chances of me getting a different movie that actually does adhere closer to the book are slim to nil.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, this could be a fine film, but it will always still be the film that kept me from getting that other film.
Mm-hmm.
All
right. Right, but what are you going to do?
I don't know. Nothing. I have no power.
Kill Mark Forster.
I don't want to do that. Okay. Do you want to do that?
I mean, I won't.
Okay. Did you ever see the movie Stay?
Nah.
Okay. I have a feeling that's another one that we would disagree on. Yes. I also want to see The Bling Ring. I feel like we've talked about that before.
Very good.
Excellent. You've seen it?
Yeah, I would like to see it again.
All right. Ringing endorsement.
So, yeah, if you want to see it together.
Totally. You know, invite me up. We'll grab a beer afterwards.
Definitely check out The Bling Ring.
All right. It's a great, great conversation.
All right, so let's talk about what we've watched on our own, and then we can be on our way. So, Danny, you start us off.
Oh, well, yesterday I was at the Museum of the Moving Image to see a 35mm print of Ron, which I had not seen before. Have either of you seen it?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite the work. I was probably getting more into serious... tone now. I was probably surprised by how kind of quiet the film was in a lot of parts. I kind of, you know, while there are battle sequences and they're very stunning, especially on the big screen, a lot of the movie is this like very quiet kind of character drama, not only with the main character, but between his sons and the people they converse with. And there's also a very good female character in the film. For a while, I was wondering if there was going to be any like female presence, and then she kind of shows up and like causes a stir. And that's a very good role. And then the lead performance. I wonder if I should try to say his name, Tatsuya Nakadai. He was there at the screening, and he was talking afterwards about the film. And there's one scene in the movie where his character kind of like falls off a cliff, and it's like a pretty steep cliff, but not one that you would like die from or I guess get seriously injured. But someone in the crowd asked him like, "How far did you have to jump for that cliff?" And I think everyone assumed it was a stupid question because it was like, why would he have had to jump off a cliff? But he actually like pointed to the top of the movie screen, and he was like, yeah, probably from the top of the curtain to the floor, which I'm guessing is like 30 or 40 feet. And he was just like, yeah, like Kurosawa wants that realism. And I was just like, I was like terrified. I was like, oh my God, like, haven't you done other movies with this guy? Like, what else have you been demanded to do? Like, he was just like, yeah, jump off that 40-foot cliff.
Every death in those movies is real.
Yeah, it was just like a shocking comment. So, yeah, it was a good experience. We had the good film print, we had the good movie, and we had the good discussion with a translator. And a very, very good experience.
All right,
overall.
Excellent. Nick, what have you checked out that we should check out?
Saw a number of... good movies this past week. I think I'm going to recommend, I'm not going to recommend my favorite, but I'm going to
wait, go why with not?
One. I'm going to go with a good one, but it's I'm picking this specifically because A, you can see it on Netflix, and B, it's a pretty underseen work. It's called One from the Heart. It is a 1982 movie directed by Francis Ford Coppola. It was his follow-up to Apocalypse Now. And it is perhaps, unfortunately, it's perhaps best known for being one of the biggest box office flops of all time. He financed it himself for about $25 million, and it made a little under $637,000 at the box office.
Ouch.
So you can imagine how... I believe he has said, actually, that every movie he made from like The Outsiders up to and including The Rainmaker, which is a stretch of about 14 years, was in some part to pay off One from the Heart, because it was such a massive flop. And perhaps the saddest thing about that all is that the movie's pretty good, too. It's a not exactly a musical, but it's a very music-dependent drama, romantic drama, starring Frederick Forrest, who you may know as Chef from Apocalypse Now, and Terry Garr. It takes place in Las Vegas, and the movie is actually more about, after these two people break up, how they go about their lives over a short period of time and try to reconcile and try to figure themselves out. And I think that if you're a fan of... I mean, I don't want to say a fan of Coppola, because I think most people are, just by virtue of the four movies he made in the 70s. But if you're a fan of what he did after that and kind of his more visually experimental side, this movie would really be a total pleasure. This, his very elaborate, very elegant use of crossfading, which communicates the story in a way almost like any, even semi-modern romance. It actually reminded me a bit of the films of F.W. Murnau in a way. A lot of silent dramas, kind of how he's telling his story so distinctly through visuals. And it has a great Tom Waits soundtrack. And I'm not even a huge Tom Waits fan, and I really like the music in this movie. I think that the movie deserves a reappraisal. And I don't know if it'll ever get it, but you could see it for yourself on Netflix, and maybe you'll be a fan. And also feel very sad for what it did to Coppola's career.
All right. So, yeah, I was going to say that's a little bit notorious. Wait, what was the best thing you saw this week? Because I'm still...
I think the best thing I saw was a film by Alain René called Muriel or The Time of Return, which is his third feature after Hiroshima Mon Amour and Last Year at Marienbad.
Okay.
Funny enough, actually, I was reading about the film after I watched it, and there are some people who think it's actually the most difficult of those three movies, the most complex and hard to grasp, which might be true, but I think that it flows on a kind of like Marienbad and kind of like Hiroshima. It flows on a certain wavelength that if you go with it, it'll click rather nicely. So yeah, that's a great film. And if you're at all a fan of his other work and you haven't seen that, by all means, dive in.
And where did you see that?
I just got the DVD from Netflix.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm going to talk about the film that I saw, Palme d'Or winner, and it is... that was not for dramatic effect. I actually had to cough. it is The Wind That Shakes the Barley.
Yes, I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen
it? No.
You haven't, but neither of you have seen it?
No.
Oh, man.
Inform us of Ken Loach's work.
Yeah, love Ken Loach. Love Cillian Murphy. Yeah, this is a great film. I don't know. I've Irish descent, so I always find myself siding with the Irish. And being able to see a feature drama, meticulously directed, perfectly acted, that deals with the startup of the Irish Republican Army fighting against the British occupation, is always a good time. The fact that it's grounded in a very, very affecting family drama, and the fact that it's filled with just some really fantastic, outstanding actors, including Liam Cunningham, who I love. Yeah. Yeah. It's a damn good movie, guys. You should all check it out. I was really expecting that both of you would have seen it and we'd have a little bit more to say.
One of the few recent Best Picture winners Palme d'Or winners I just haven't found myself getting around to.
It's good. The beginning is very reliant on the I guess quote unquote action elements, and then it really does chart the way that the revolution takes hold, and then what they gain from it, and then kind of the what is at stake if they can't make it work. It's a very holistic picture of, you know, what it is to rise up and try to take, you know, governance for yourself, and the way that that can kind of backfire sometimes. So it's good. It's sympathetic towards the Irish, but it's not, you know, pandering or it doesn't seek to cover up some of the major bungles that occurred. And yeah, it's a damn good movie. Anyone who's interested in history, especially related to the British and the Irish, should check it out. That's that. Mm-hmm. So, let's tell the people where we can be found, and then we can leave until next week when we will be talking about World War Z. Nick, why don't you kick us off?
Okay, you can find me at thefilmstage.com, twitter.com/Nick_Newman, and on the new Krypton built upon Kal-El's buzz.
Oh, God. And Danny, where can we find
thefilmstage.com. TheKingBulletin.com, Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin, and ManofSteel.com/podcast.
Danny, I'm going to start suggesting that you write these out beforehand, because yours never land quite as well as I think you'd like them to.
Oh,
yeah, that was pretty weak.
A for effort.
I was telling some people earlier about your wonderful impressions of celebrities.
Mine?
Yeah.
Just, yeah, wonderful and how bad they are.
Yeah, like your impression of Christopher Walken. Hi, this is Christopher Walken.
I'm sure he says that, you know? Probably a good impression.
That's a damn good impression. I can be found at thefilmstage.com, as well as my personal blog, dearfilm.net. You can also be found on Twitter, twitter.com/BrianJRowan. And I'm not going to attempt to make a joke, because how can you follow up those two gems we already got? So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us. Make sure to give us a comment and rating, and join us next week when we'll be talking about Mark Forster and Brad Pitt's World War Z.
Yeah, I know what a hipster is. I'm around them all the time.
Okay,
You're
breaking up.
Not hipsters. The hipsters just they wore, you know, hello.
You're
maybe
back.
That's a sign. Maybe that's a sign we're not even supposed to have this conversation. like someone again, is just cutting it. Okay, no.
God is putting his finger on the button. Is someone like beatboxing?
No, I was clearing my throat.
Oh, okay. And Nick, what about yourself? What have you checked out that you think we should see? Fucking shit, I can't talk.